What is going on, hockey fans? Welcome back to another episode of The Avalanche Warning, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. It's been a bit. Hello, you guys. Grant and I went on vacation, enjoyed a bit of a time by the lake. Gavin, you graced Europe with your presence. How's everybody feeling? But it's still a bit of a slow period.
A failure by the Avalanche front office, really.
Still
a failure. You're not fixing a lot here. There's still holes. They're pretty big ones that you got to fill. So I guess we can see how that's going to go.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would just say, like, taking a look at all the other things, all the trades made over the course of the last season, like the seemingly like a lot of them that they were, because it was definitely a lot of trades. You just look at the assets you kind of threw into a black hole and you say, man, that'd be nice right now to get better now, because this free agent class is not good. And
yeah,
but yeah, I mean, still a lot of work left to be done. So we'll see how it turns out for the rest of the season.
I was going to say, it seems like our manifestations of news are finally back. We all fortunately had time to record tonight after some sort of news. I mean, we can call it big because there hasn't been anything else like super huge to talk about. Joel Kiviranta, another addition to the bottom six, I guess we'll start out with this, signed to a 1 year, $1.25 million contract. A guy who had a career season last season, one of the best to date for him as an individual player, really made some key contributions to the Avalanche that I mean, still kind of sit in my head as a highlight reel kind of situation for Joel Kiviranta. Gavin, I'll throw it over to you first. This is a situation, definitely bottom six, not somebody I see cracking the top six with as heavy as this is looking to be with Landeskog joining the fold again. I know we've talked about that a little bit so far. Just your thoughts on Kivi's signing.
Honestly, I don't mind it at all. Obviously Kiviranta had that career year. I didn't expect him to return to the Avs. I thought he would kind of price himself out and then go get paid bad amounts of money by hypothetically bad teams run by Ron Francis that may or may not be called Seattle Kraken. But he didn't. He actually got signed for only $1.25 million. 1.5 would have been kind of like something I would have accepted. I would have kind of been not the happiest about it. But yeah, 1.25 is fine. And honestly, with the cap going up, I think there was even a settlement reached about the new league minimum for the NHL, and it's going to go up to $1 million and stop being 775. So honestly, I kind of look at Kiviranta's contract. Like, you look at your third line players, they're not making $3 million anymore. They're starting to make $4 million as the cap goes up. That's kind of the new league minimum for me, is close to $1 million. So I think Kivi makes a reasonable price. I like what he does defensively. He's actually very worth that for how good he is defensively. Even if he had 0 points offensively, I would be pretty happy with it. But he does. He can actually score goals. Not 16. He will never do that again, mark my words. But yeah, I think that on, and he had like 84 shots. Like, I checked the metrics and he had 16 goals. That's an absurd shooting percentage. That's not going to continue. But
I'm not very good at math. I think I saw somewhere that's like 13% for shooting or something.
Never shot more than 10 in his career, it's, that won't happen, but I like it. I mean, honestly, it makes the bottom six a lot better, especially when you look at the roster. There's now four players on the bottom six that I'm actually happy are there, but obviously there's more moves that I would like to be made there.
Yeah. And then Grant, throwing it over to you. I mean, we kind of talked about this before hitting record. 1.25 with, and this is after the signing, the Avalanche have 2.098 and 3.3 whatever, just over $2 million left to play with for this upcoming season. Your thoughts?
Well, Kiwi Rauta is in a really tough spot. It's a lot of players bridging this gap of they're not young enough that they have the entire future and the cap going up, and they're not old enough where they have to make enough money as at the point that they are in. At him being, you know, 29 years old, yeah, he could probably get $3 million, $4 million somewhere else, but you're also sacrificing that as well. But also, you don't really want to lock, if you're Kiwi Ranta or any third line or fourth line guy, especially with the caps going up and probably minimum cap salary going up, you don't really want to lock yourself into a deal of like you don't want to lock into something like 1.75 for like 4 years. You're not getting your money's worth there, especially when in the next season, people are probably going to get paid on the fourth line 2.5 or 3 million, like Gavin was talking about. I mean, I love Kiwi Rauta. He's just a bottom depth guy that you need. He's an Andrew Cogliano at its on the left wing. That's all you really need. But with the cap being with the Avalanche only having 2 million left in cap, that is pathetic. That really is, especially since you've traded Coyle and you've traded Wood away. And yeah, we're all expecting the Jack Drury to really roll into 3C, but does anybody remember Alex Newhook rolling into 3C, JT Compher rolling into 2C? The Avalanche do not do well with developing players down the middle. I think down the sides, they're fine. I mean, you have guys who you've developed like Logan O'Connor, who's actually, you know, pretty capable on the right wing. But especially down the middle, I mean, the Avalanche have not proven that someone can really adapt. I mean, Casey Mittelstadt was supposed to be another guy to grow into the second line center role. And are we really trusting these guys to like step up into a position where there has been no proof that the Avalanche can get them ready and up to speed by the time the season starts, or even if they have a slow start, will they ever pick it back up? That's, you know, it's going to be an interesting one. Going to be a really interesting one.
You almost kind of got to throw your faith a little bit into the changes behind the bench that they're making. And I guess this is a decent time to point out the hiring of Mark Popovich as the skills coach. He's somebody who's been in the organization for a while. You almost got to kind of hope that there's new voices there that can almost sparks something, because I feel like that's really what they kind of need if you're looking for that development down the center wing. I like that you mentioned Logan O'Connor. Ross Colton, I think, is another one. You saw that shift from center to wing for him this past season that I really, really liked. I like that Bednar kind of tested that out a little more regularly in with all the roster changes going on last season. But it's I don't know. I think it is definitely a situation where Kiwi's, you put up the numbers you did last season. And Gavin, I think I am in sole agreement with you that I don't think he recreates that. That's going to be a little difficult to repeat a second year in a row. He's got to, there's some sort of miracle that's got to happen here. But I do think there is that expectation now that we've seen that he's capable of it. For him to repeat some of that and create some depth that I think the Avalanche will be looking for. Because, I mean, we already, again, know about the very top-heavy top six. And we know Bednar really heavily relies on those guys for extra minutes. We don't see a lot of minutes come from the bottom six. And I think I'd like to see some of that for us to see what Kiwi is capable of in the upcoming season. But I still don't mind. I don't mind 1.25. I don't think it's an overpay. I think I would have been a little mad if it was anything above that. But given the season he had last season, he earned it. I showed you what I'm capable of. I earned myself a little bit of a pay raise. Maybe I won't ever do it again, but I grabbed my check. I have my bag. Let's go. So
go ahead, Gavin.
I'm happy about it, really. One thing I do want to mention, though, is when it comes to the cap space, there's a lot of guys on the current roster that won't be there on opening night. So, like, most likely Gushkin is a guy that the Avs recently traded for. They traded Oscar Lawson to San Jose for him. There's like quite a few guys that won't be there on opening night. And so when all of those guys are moved out and the cap is kind of more near fixed, it's actually more near $4 million, which is enough to at least get like one more third line player, hopefully, going forward. And that's kind of the hope, is like Kiviranta's signing didn't take a whole lot of money left, and you still have a lot left to work with, which is what you hope you would have when you actively blew up your bottom six that you just recently assembled at the trade deadline. So you're hoping that obviously there's a plan there.
Well, what we've learned from Chris McFarland is there is no plan.
Something to keep in mind too with Logan O'Connor and his cap hit coming back into the fold once he's relieved from LTIR.
Yeah. That's true too.
They're definitely locked in that position. That was a pun, by the way.
Going off what you were saying, Bailey, though, with maybe trusting the third and fourth lines a tiny bit more, I will say, given last season's playoff stats, because that's what it all matters about for the Colorado Avalanche, you know, regular season, 16 goals, I love that. However, Joel Kiviranta did not have any points, nor did he have a shot on goal. So I would actually like to see maybe that change.
What?
He had nine. He had nine shots on goal, but not, you know, not great. I think it's hard when looking at this third and fourth line that's really being constructed of AHLers, and prove it, guys, that. It's hard to put your faith in those guys, except
the problem. I don't know if I'd call Jack Drury and Ross Colton AHLers.
I'm talking about the fourth line. The fourth line. Because the third line will most likely be Drury, Colton, and O'Connor, which is fine. But the fourth line, you're really going to have to do some finagling there, because that's going to be Kiviranta and then probably two AHLers that you're just saying, well, please work out.
Again, Parker Kelly.
Oh, right. I forgot about Parker Kelly. He's going
to occupy that center spot, most likely.
Pretty much an AHLer. I like Parker Kelly, but that's what he is. That's what you are. That's what he is. But yeah, this is going to be an interesting season for sure, especially for the bottom six, because it's not as top heavy. There's no Mikko Rantanen up there anymore.
Yeah, we did kind of glaze over it. Do want to kind of touch a little bit more on the Daniil Gushkin, I think that's how you say his name, trade from San Jose. While we're talking about AHLers, I like the depth that this guy brings for the Avs prospect system. Finally kind of dump a failed experiment in Oscar Lawson, which is unfortunate because it's, you know, first round draft pick in 2021, 28th overall. You play four NHL games and nothing comes of it. You get a little bit of trust in the AHL that really doesn't pan out into anything spectacular from what I was kind of looking at. I mean, you've got a guy who can maybe mesh well, and he's got a little bit of versatility on the wings and things of that sort. 26 points in 61 games in the NHL isn't anything to call home about. And we saw a little bit last season, the Avalanche, with a lot of the roster issues they had, a lot of these guys are getting chances on a big stage. They're getting a chance to show what they can do in a call-up situation for the Avalanche. And I was not particularly enthralled with anything that I saw from Olausen in any of his games. Even if we're talking about the two that he played last season with the Avalanche, going back to 23-24, one game, even across the board. I really like Daniil. He's played in multiple games with San Jose. He's gotten his first NHL point, not to also mention his first NHL goal. He's a guy who is a reliable call-up should you need somebody with a stronger skating presence on that bottom six. I'll throw it over to you guys.
Also, it's Gushchin. 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 Okay. I just Googled that. So, Gavin, but you, though.
No, I was just going to say, like, looking at both of their stats and the difference in the players, like, at minimum, at least you got a guy that can actually play any level of high tier hockey in Gushchin versus Oscar Lawson, who has been mid since the day he was drafted and is an utter failure once again by the Avs scouting staff. I mean, really, it's kind of like you look at different like statistics and how it's paired. Like Bailey, you mentioned earlier that in just 61 games in the AHL, he only had 26 points versus Gushchin had 51 points in 56 games. So it's obviously like the Eagles, I'm sure, are happy. They're elated. Mm-hmm. But in the NHL, I mean, he's a guy that you're at least hoping will come in and provide some type of meaningful backup. I mean, I remember last season, technically, when the Avs were so injured and they had to call up a bunch of different guys, mm-hmm. like, when it was time to call in a sixth forward because you pulled your goalie, it was like Chase Bradley. And it's like, oh, wow, this is miserable.
We're skipping the bottom of the barrel here.
It was not the best. But like with guys like Gushchin, at least you're getting someone that is proven at least at the AHL level and hopefully has something to give at the NHL level, even if it's a small role, it's a role that at least provides something. Obviously, the guy's small. He's very much like Gavin Brindley, like we kind of mentioned a little bit before. He's 5'8", not even, 170 pounds. Yeah, if this guy was 6'3", he'd be a top 10 pick, but he's not. So it's just kind of the unfortunate
there. What are you talking about? Any size player can play in the NHL, Gavin. There's no such thing as size advantage in the NHL.
Brad, have I ever told you about a player named Sam Girard?
God, there's no such thing as size advantage, is there? No such thing whatsoever.
Oh yeah.
And you know what we're exactly talking what
thought about? The too small to play in the NHL. Every one of those guys have been super injured, so I guess that's not a real thing.
Too small to play in the NHL. Too small.
And what I'll point out while we're getting off topic, we've already done our Girard rant for the off season. I'm sure we'll get much more once the season picks up.
One rant? Come on now.
He started it. It wasn't me.
Oh my God, I feel like a mom right now.
One rant? Come on
now. Oh God. No, but like you mentioned his size, and I went to a few of the Eagles Barracuda games last season, and the one thing that really stood out to me about the team as a whole, not just Gushchin, was the physicality. And it's very well known in hockey circles that the AHL plays a very different game from the NHL. It's a powerhouse. There's brawls all over the place. It's known for being a rough hitting game. Gushchin, for being a smaller guy, being 5'8", and even in his Elite Prospect scouting report, is listed as somebody who is surprisingly very physical for the size that he brings on the ice. He's got a very not only physical presence, but he's all over the place. He's got incredible speed. Almost acts as like a third defenseman type player, which I think is something not only the Eagles, but the Avalanche could really, really benefit from in certain situations. I'm hoping they don't run into the same injury woes as they did last season, just because that was a literal miserable.
Just last season? It's been every season since the Cup run.
This past season's a little more fresh in my mind, and I don't know.
Let's not forget that the Avalanche in 23-24 started a line of Charles Hudon, Mikko Rantanen, and then I think it was Oscar Olausson on that top line. against St. Louis, where Mikko Rantanen had to score a hat trick to beat them in OT. Oh, by the way, Blues fans, by the way, St. Louis Blues, I just got to point this out here. You lost to an AHL team consisting of only really Mikko Rantanen and Cale Makar on the damn roster. God, how poverty is your organization?
We're going for the throat today. Oh, my God.
How poverty is your organization, St. Louis? No, that's right. You live in poverty anyways. Anyways, keep going.
That's really all I had on Gushchen. I think this is an incredible get for the Avalanche.
I think to give Oscar Olausson and maybe Gushchen a little bit of a leeway here is you're not the Anaheim Ducks and you're not the San Jose Sharks. I mean, Gushchen is going from a team where all you're doing is trying to develop your game and get used to the NHL level, right? And I think, especially for the Avalanche, it's hard to find guys who are NHL caliber ready when they're kind of you're hoping that they turn out right. That's why a lot of people, when the Callum Ritchie deal got done for Brock Nelson, was not very happy, because that was a guy that you could rely on to play fourth line minutes, especially now that he's at the end of his junior career and he will be in the NHL full time. That was really a big reason why, because now you're guessing. You're guessing with anybody that you can get. And it's not like you can develop them and say, don't worry, we'll give you 3 months. We'll give you a 3 month slot on the roster where you can develop, get ready at the NHL level. You're not in San Jose. You're not in Anaheim. You're not in Chicago. There's no such thing as we'll get them next year. It's we're getting them this year. And I think to speak to Oscar Olausson a little bit, It's hard being a middle range guy and adapting into that situation. Normally that's reserved for like first round draft picks and guys who are, you know, on the ball. Now the Gushchen, personally, I don't know very much about him, but if he has spent time at the NHL level, I am looking forward to seeing if a guy like him can really step up and insert himself into this roster. And we don't need him. We don't need him to be amazing. We just need to, for him to do a good enough job that we're not going to point him out and be like, hey, is that 5'10 guy over there on D getting absolutely smashed into the boards because he can't play physical and literally every single defenseman in the NHL is physical when it comes to the playoffs? Samuel Girard.
Oh, God.
If you thought the Samuel Girard hate was going to stop with the Gavin rant, let me tell you, I got a bridge to sell you. And hilariously, it's the one you can find in St. Louis.
Lamona.
Oh my!
No, when it comes to guys like Gushchen, guys like Gavin Brindley, like who's very much the same size. That's why I keep comparing the two. Even guys like I guess Marchand is who like the picturesque like person you hope they turn into is. You got to look at what their game is, and if they're like only offensive minded, there's a very low chance that they'll be good in the NHL. The only two guys that I can think of that are actually like that is Cole Caulfield, who is very one dimensional, but is obviously very good at the one thing he does, which is offense. I wouldn't call it one thing. He very much has a lot of dimensions when it comes to offense. Mm-hmm. And then I would say Johnny Gaudreau, rest in peace, was
rest in peace.
Very, very good at probably the best I've seen as an undersized player, putting up good offense.
Well, and that's the comparison that I was going to make too, because you look at Cole Caulfield, who really modeled his game after a guy like Gaudreau.
What about Patrick Kane? That guy's
that was going to be the other name that I brought up too, who is, you know, very, especially for his time, like very, very small offensive guy who. Yeah. Wasn't really known. I mean, he's not known for his defensive prowess.
Yeah. He's only 5'10", guys. Come on.
But, and obviously, like, if you're not as offensively gifted, I think, like, the best way as an undersized player to make it in any type of professional hockey is to do a lot of other stuff, basically, which is to play with physicality.
Profound.
Play with defensive, like, acumen. And mm-hmm. that's what guys like that do. That's what Marchand made his career doing. That's what hopefully either Gushchen or Brindley learn to do moving forward. At least, like, if they don't even make it to the NHL, I hope at least they'll do well in the AHL and make a career there. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what has to happen for small players, is if they are very, like, physically shy and they don't like to check, and they don't like to really get involved, whatever, then they'll have a tough career. And
Seth Jarvis,
yeah. Oh, Seth Jarvis at least produces in the playoffs. That's kind of nice to have.
I mean, so, the Hurricanes pay. I'd hope he does.
Produces well by getting swept in the Eastern Conference Finals. Sorry, what?
Oh my God.
Sorry, what?
This is an Avalanche podcast, sir. Speaking of, while we're kind of getting onto our rants too, I do want to kind of shift into your topic of conversation that you kind of
Don't forget about the 30th anniversary. We got to get that first.
We'll touch on that last. And I do want to get into this and talk about, again, we've mentioned multiple times since starting the podcast that this has been a very slow season, not just for the Avalanche. It's kind of been a league-wide thing, but the Avalanche kind of have a little bit of a microscope, I'd say, on them for some of the moves that they've made leading back to the trade deadline, just before the trade deadline, going, I think, all the way back to Martin Necas coming to the Avalanche. And asset management and how poorly that's been kind of managed, not just by Chris McFarland, but from the front office as a whole. As great as they may be as people, I know especially you, Grant, have a lot to say about this. but I'll throw it over to you and just kind of your thoughts on C-Mac dating back to the trade deadline.
All right, talk about a worse summer to start an Avalanche podcast than this one, where there's like absolutely nothing going on. And honestly, you're getting excited about Brent Burns signing for $1 million and Kiwi Ranta signing for 1.25, and maybe I guess Brock Nelson signing for 7.5. But you know, who cares? So on to you've heard the Ray Bennett rant from Gavin. You are about to hear the Chris McFarland rant from me. So, if we go back to 2022, when the Avalanche really kind of when Joe Sakic became president and kind of handed the keys of the general manager office over to Chris McFarland, we will see that there's been a slight downward trajectory in terms of regular season performance and overall playoff performance too. Only winning one series when you're touted as Stanley Cup champion or Stanley Cup contenders every once in three seasons isn't that great. Now, a lot of people will say, well, they were Stanley Cup contenders, you know, leading up to it, but at least they were winning one round consistently. And then, you know, you came up against Marc-Andre Fleury in a Vezina winning season. My biggest problem with Chris McFarland, and this is looking through revisionist history and going through everything, yada, 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 is there is not a single plan or anything really that we can go off of that he has proven himself as a great GM. Now, some people might look at last season and say, well, I mean, look at all these trades he did. He rebuilt a lineup. Well, I'm going to tell you why maybe that rebuilding that lineup wasn't too great. Anyways, he's really had a hard time getting a lot of things. So if we flash back to 2022, when you signed Nichushkin, Manson, and everybody else to their big contracts after the Stanley Cup season, and you let Kadri walk. You know what? That kind of sucks. But you had JT Compher and you had Alex Newhook both being prepared to take over the second line center spot and third line center spot, respectively. Now, I think as Avalanche fans, we all seen how that worked out, too. You also had a guy in Evan Rodriguez that you had signed that right after that season as well. Not to mention that you had also traded for Georgiev in that season as well. And if I would like to remind everybody about that Georgiev trade, it was a third round pick, a fifth round pick, and a third round pick. Two thirds and a fifth for that. And we only really got one decent season out of Georgiev. Now, a lot of people look at other teams, like you look at the Red Wings, who have the Iser plan. You had the Maple Leafs with the Shanna plan. You had a lot of these teams that are putting 5-year, 4-year plans ahead of time and trying to achieve a goal of, you know, playoff or being a Stanley Cup contender. I do not see that at all from Chris McFarland. He's very much a guy who just patches things. He makes holes for himself and patches them himself. He doesn't really have a plan going forward. With all of the attempts at 2C that we had the Ryan Johansson experiment. Back in 2023, we had Evan Rodriguez as the third line center when we were trying to have JT Comfort be a second line center, when that guy has done nothing and still does nothing on the Red Wings. And honestly, from Chris McFarland, I do have to ask here for a second. When are you going to finally hit? You got Brock Nelson. Oh, that's great. What did you give up? You gave up your number one prospect in Callum Ritchie that was going to be your future second line center, as all you had to do was really develop him. All you had to do with that guy, you could have traded anybody else, but you traded Callum Ritchie and a first just to get Brock Nelson at 32 years old and then proceed to sign him to 7.5 when Jonathan Tavares literally signed a contract 6 days later at 4.3. And I have to know, with everything that he's done and in his tenure as GM, he's nothing has ever stuck. There has not been a player that he has signed that has stayed all 3 years of his tenureship, except for the big names. And my God, is it really hard to fucking sign and Cale Makar, Devon Toews, and Nathan MacKinnon. But that also leads into another thing. You have let guys walk that you gave up a lot of capital for. You let, like Gavin was saying earlier, you let Sean Walker walk after giving Ryan Johansson over to the Flyers. You've let a lot of, because guess what? I've watched the Carolina Hurricanes. I've seen Sean Walker play. That dude's actually pretty fucking good. But no, you let that guy walk. You traded away Bowen Byram when you needed to get a second line center. Oh, Byram just signed $6.5 million for the Sabres and is probably going to be one of their best defensive players for a long time, because the Sabres are an absolute trash organization because we don't have Palm Beaches, right? And so, flashing back to last season, we all knew, everybody knew that Georgiev and Anunin were a problem. And what did you do? You waited for the season to start so that you could get Blackwood at a higher price, and you got Wedgwood at a higher price. But then you also went and got Juuso Parsonen, a younger guy who you were supposed to develop, and you traded him away at the deadline for Ryan Lindgren. Then you let Ryan Lindgren walk, and now we're sitting in a position where our top two D-men or Devon Toews, Cale Makar, who are probably going to have to play 23 minutes a night, and then you have your second D pair of the terrible, awful. I mean, my God, watch a playoff series with Girard and Manson at a second D pair setting, and it's an absolute fucking joke. And then you also, on top of that, you got Brent Burns, another right-hand shot, while you're still trying to develop Sam Malinsky. Where is the planning? What are you doing? And you're not even able to retain guys that you've had for forever. You couldn't even come to an agreement with Mikko Rantanen. Whether that was the smart decision or not, I don't know. Maybe because he did put up a hat trick against you when you fucking lost in April, you stupid idiot. And I have to know, right? What is the plan? Is there a plan? Do you have an idea of what you're going to do before, like, this season and the season next? Or are you just going, this is a problem, sure, throw a Band-Aid on it. This is a problem, throw a Band-Aid on it. You know what I'm saying? There is no consistency in his roster moves. And I haven't found, maybe other than Blackwood, I haven't found a single win where he hasn't been the loser of the trade. Because when he traded for Nelson, you were the loser of that trade. You lost that trade. And then when you traded for Coyle, you were also the loser because you had given Mittelstadt a $5.25 million contract, and you could only get a guy like Coyle who's worth $5.5 million because that's all that was available. That's all you could get for a third line center. But then you know what you did is you turned around 2 months later and shipped him off to the Columbus Blue Jackets just so you could get more cap to sign the guy who did not perform in the playoffs. Revisionist history is king, right? We all understand, like, you know, we can look back and roast into glasses and be like, well, this is where you messed up. This is where you messed up. This is where you messed up. But at some point, do we even want to like call him like a good GM at some point? Bailey just left. I don't know why.
She died.
She'll be back. Like I was the first episode. But I mean, it just doesn't. It doesn't make any sense here. It doesn't. You haven't been. You've made terrible trades. You've been the loser of most trades. When are you actually going to start developing a plan, right? Because you got McKinnon for a few more years being elite. You have Landeskog. Hopefully you can get maybe three more years out of him. I mean, he's going to be almost 35 in three seasons. Like, how much are you really going to get out of him? You have Cale Makar. You'll have the generational defenseman. He'll always be number one in the NHL. No matter how much the Vancouver fans and Canadian fans think Quinn Hughes is better, you're wrong. But you got to, like, you have to have a plan here. You know, the Florida Panthers had a plan when they decided that they were going to get rid of Huberto and Weegar, and they got Matthew Tkachuk. Now, nobody would have seen what came next. Nobody would have known that. But where is your plan of like that? Like, I understand that's what you did when you traded Mikko Rantanen away. But you already have Martin Nature rumored saying he does not want to stay here. How are you not convincing someone to stay here? Especially when you won a cup 3 years ago. That should be the least of your problems. Gavin, did you want to chime in? Because I need to grab a sip of water.
No, you're good. Yeah, sure. And I think the point you made was absolutely right about Chris McFarland. No matter, like, I look at some of his trades and they're so hot and cold. But really the thing I look at the end of the day is, like, where's your W? Like, where's your win? Where do you actually get a trade where you're not swindled? Like, I remember one of the they were talking about it. I think this was the 2024 trade deadline after it. So technically like two seasons ago, that trade deadline, where they brought in Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker. And a lot of people were talking about it and they were interviewing like GMs and they were saying like, oh yeah, Chris and like the thing I'll give to Chris McFarland is he's a very like busy guy. Like he's a very hard worker. He always tries to find trades. Like he's always on the phones. The discredit I'll give to him is like all the GMs basically said like, oh yeah, he's never trying to like win a trade. He's always trying to like get a fair deal. It's like that sounds like a guy everyone loves because they know he's not competitive. Sounds like to me that, and you look at like all of these trades, like my least favorite in the season, like we mentioned before, is that Ryan Lindgren trade. You threw like assets completely into a black hole. I mean, you got Jimmy Vesey and Ryan Lindgren, both players who have either signed somewhere else or have just completely left North America altogether. And they got like a second round pick and a fourth round pick in return, as well as Parsonen. All right, there goes a second, a third, and another third, basically, because that's what you traded for Juuso Parsonen. You look at the Charlie Coyle trade, like my least favorite trade ever. That this trade is like an almost like an F if it wasn't for the trade they made earlier. Like you get Charlie Coyle, who's like one of the worst third line centers in terms of his contract. Like in terms of a third line center, I think he's pretty good. But he's
phenomenal, yeah.
Horrific contract. And you trade Casey Mittelstadt, who's like still kind of a good prospect. Like, okay, that's somehow not one for one. You trade a second round pick, like, all right, cool. Does that come with reduced salary? No. Okay. Well, we also traded William Zellers, who was a prospect that actually kind of popped off not for the Avs really, but was a third round pick that popped off, had like over 50 goals in the USHL. No salary retained. Like it's just, you get beaten so often on trades and you look at other GMs, you look at Jim Neal, of the Dallas Stars, who like wins GM of the year despite never winning a cup year after year. I'd rather have that guy every day over Chris McFarland. I look at honestly almost all the guy Tampa fired, the one that brought in guys like Jake Guentzel, the one that was trying to fix like
Griezmann.
They I would have brought
Griezmann, right?
He really knows how to deal with a team that's at the end of their cup window that still like has all the pieces, but just trying to make the cap work. I don't think Chris McFarland's proven it whatsoever. I think he's had too long of a tenure, and if we wait one more year and he fails again, it's too late. And I think the same is exactly of Jared Bednar. I think his time has run out as well. I don't think he should be the head coach of the Avalanche. I think that his career has pretty much been mediocre outside of the one, obviously, cup year. Whatever. It's just one cup ring. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, he obviously took him to the top of the mountain. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's you look at his career before that, consistently underperforming in the playoffs. Team was never able to take the next step. Lost against Vegas, lost against Dallas, against Rick Bonus when he was coaching Dallas. I mean, that's an embarrassment. And then has lost every year since. I think that his time has expired with the Avs, and yet we continue to run it back with this coaching staff that does not have the winning pedigree for people to be able to come out and say, like, well, you can't shake it up. You can't shake it up because that ruins the winning culture. What winning culture? Like, that's my question.
Yeah, it's becoming a little stale. But also, I didn't want to piggyback off what you were saying about that 2024 trade deadline. I'll give you two other names that actually that they let go and didn't re-sign for some reason. Anybody remember Brandon Duhaime? I saw he's doing pretty well with the Capitals. No, I remember him. I saw him doing pretty well there. I also saw Yakov Trenin doing pretty well with the Wild now, didn't I? So when will we see a GM not go after things because they're needed? When are we going to see a GM win things because we're just going to be better? We're going to offer a better deal. We're going to be better. And we're not going to have it blow back up in our face.
Yeah. Right? Where's my, like, Devon Taves for 2 second round?
I mean, deal? Where's that? I think if you were Chris McFarland, there is a absolutely glaring issue that you have to solve. You have to get rid of the, you already re-signed Manson. You cannot keep going ahead with Girard. You just cannot. That mix does not work. It has not worked for almost two full seasons. Three, if you really want to count 2023, but I mean, that season was such a cluster of injuries and everything, really, like, you can't really hold that against them. But like, it does not work anymore. It does not work. And to quote Steve Dangle, the mix does not work. The mix doesn't work. When, and I understand you want things to develop. You have to give players time to have chemistry with one another, and you have to give a little bit of leeway, right? But when do we say enough is enough, especially with this construction of this current roster? Because as we're going to see, Cale Makar and Devon Taves might hit milestones for time on ice with how terrible these second and third D pairings are. Brent Burns kind of helps a little bit, but my God, I mean, you're going to be relying on Samuel Girard and Sam Malinsky. And I like Sam Malinsky, but he's not capable of taking on 18 minutes a night. Sam Girard used to be good, but are you really going to want to rely on him come the playoffs too? The road ahead is clear. You have to get a different decor. The NHL, especially the playoffs, is so physical that you cannot roll in anymore with players that are underneath 6 foot or 6 foot one and 200 pounds. It just doesn't work. It's not, you're not Duncan Keith out there at 6 foot one, who's 195, but my God, is that dude going to level Ovi for some stupid ass reason? Your time for having smaller defensemen is over. That cannot fly in the NHL playoffs anymore. It can fly in the regular season, does not work in the playoffs, and that's all you're playing for. That's all you have left. And with McKinnon, Landeskog, and Makar and Taves, there's no mention. There should be no mention, if you're Chris McFarland, of how am I going to end really well in the regular season? Who cares? Florida made it to the Stanley Cup final as an 8 seed because the Pittsburgh Penguins for some reason lost to the Chicago Blackhawks in the last game of the season.
The question I'll pose to you then, and this is in agreement with you, so don't I don't want to hear a word. When was the last time a President's Trophy winner went on to win the cup that same year.
2015 Chicago Blackhawks.
It situations like that don't come up every season.
But you're agreeing with me though.
But that's what I'm saying is like, yeah, the President's Trophy, it's a cool team accolade. It's really indicative of having a strong team through 82 games. That's awesome. Those 82 games are supposed to lead up the mountain, so to speak. Not to create any puns, but like that's where it's supposed to go. You're supposed to, it's all leading up to that bigger point of lifting the cup at the end of the season. You're not going all 82 games saying, oh, we can win the President's Trophy. Okay, cool. Wipe my hands. I'm done.
Unless you're Winnipeg, because those fans think that, you know, getting a President's Trophy is the same. But anyways.
Yeah, those are, I'd love to hear their thoughts on Connor Hellebuyck.
But I think I
the November celebratory parade that they do every year. It fills me with such joy because I know what it's going to be like at the end of April.
I want the Avalanche to be good. Now, I'm not on Gavin's train yet of Jared Bednar. I think
I would agree with you there,
Grant. I do think Gavin is right though. His time is running out. How many more first round exits do we want to see out of a head coach when you have Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar on the roster? Now hockey's more than just two guys, but it's not like they're surrounded by, it's not like you have Bedard who's surrounded by nothing. You have, you know, Landeskog, you have Natushkin, you have Taves, you have a good forward group. If you can get everybody on the same page, you have a good forward group. But, you know, for Chris McFarland, everything is gone. Like, you're the new guy. Everything's gone down ever since you got here. At least when the Avalanche were leading up to their cup run, they were winning a series every year. I mean, you just fell short in the playoffs because for some reason you just laid an egg. You know, you're the new guy. You're a big reason of why they have won one playoff series. And honestly, how could you not beat the Winnipeg Jets? I'm just, before I get too triggered. I mean, they don't even have Nikolaj Ehlers anymore. That team is such a bum.
I will say, I think there's something to be said about Bednar potentially being on the chopping block in the next couple of seasons, should there not be any progression. I think there's also something to be said about the respect that he commands in the room, the respect that he's earned from his top guys, the trust that he's created in that locker room, not to mention the fact, I mean, Gavin, you mentioned it a little bit. This is a guy, he's maybe done a little poorly in, you know, seasons leading up to the NHL, but at the end of the day, this is a guy who knows how to win at all three levels. This is a guy who has experience taking the team to the top. And this is a guy who knows what it takes. So the question has to be asked, is this a Jared Bednar problem? Is this a Chris McFarland problem? Or is it both?
Yeah, I think it is both pretty heavily. I think that really I don't even necessarily blame Jared Bednar's like methods. I just kind of think that his shelf life has expired. Really, you look at head coaches in the NHL and
he's one of the longest tenured.
Yeah. And that's not a good thing. I think that for most of the NHL, like eventually the message kind of just gets stale and players kind of stop listening to you. Look at John Cooper with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, that team is pretty well stacked to make runs. I mean, especially this season, like people thought that they could make another run and they fell short again. And they very much have shades of the Avs, which is something that's very interesting of me, which when you look at their games, there will be games where they're playing amazing. And then there'll be games where they just kind of don't show up. And I think that obviously because John Cooper and Jared Bednar are the two longest tenured coaches, they have a lot to share, which is good coaching styles. But their message is just worn thin on their teams. And I think like the last few years has proven that. I mean, John Cooper hasn't made it out of the first round in the last three seasons. It's actually worse than Jared Bednar. Still better.
I think he technically won in 2023 because he beat the Maple Leafs.
I don't think no, the Maple Leafs beat him.
Oh, wait, that's right, because the Maple Leafs beat
them. You lost to the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, that's that's bad. That's that is really bad. That is really especially since Florida and, beat them in five in the next round. That's really bad.
And then so it's just gotten worse and worse for each coach. And like yeah, to your point, Bailey, like obviously he commands like a certain level of respect in the room, but and like authority, but what has that gotten you? Like this, do you actually deserve to say that like we don't mess up the room? I think the room should get blown up because it hasn't done anything meaningful. It's very clearly lacking leadership from game to game. Obviously missing Gabe Landeskog and like a lot of issues there, but it's just gotten to a point where this organization just has been kind of mediocre and hasn't done a lot to really prove that they should be kept together. I don't know what you're holding on to at this point. I mean, like obviously you have the Stanley Cup win, but you look at the teams the Avs faced, and it was, like Florida does almost every year, a soft conference. Because obviously, if you're finding a whole lot of like good teams, it's hard to win. The difference is, like, yeah, the East is a lot softer and has been ever since the Avs kind of won in 22. But you look at the West, and like, what actual like team has the Avs actually managed to beat in the entire tenure of Jared Bednar? I mean, like, they play the Nashville Predators, who were frauds, and they blow them out. They play the St. Louis Blues, who didn't deserve to be there in the second round anyway. And they really struggle with them. Like, they actually have a lot of attitude problems, and it takes Darren Helm having, like, a miracle goal at the end to win that series in six. Otherwise, it's game seven, which this team cannot win. And you look at round three, it's against the Edmonton Oilers, who were absolute frauds coming from the Pacific Division, like a lot like they are now. And it's you look at
well, that's because the Pacific Division is a joke.
It is. And then finally, you get to a real team, which is the Tampa Bay Lightning, which like I hate to use the Tampa fans' excuse. They've gone through three rounds of hockey at this point. They have significant injuries. Now, the Avs do, too, and they press hard. But outside of that one time, the Avs have never been the team like the old Avalanche era, like 1.0 with Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg, where it's like, we're going to play Detroit and this is a great team. We got to take it to them. We're going to play like all of these great Goliaths in the Western Conference or anything else, and we're going to be the better team. Like the Avalanche have faltered at every single moment outside of that one series, like I just explained.
We hung like, eight on Vasilevsky, and he's never been the same.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely. But I wish there were – and obviously – and I think we're just getting robbed of good playoff series, and I think we will continue to get robbed as long as we employ Jared Bednar as the head coach.
I think the problem is that you debatably have the two I'm trying to think of technically the Oilers are a top three team in the West – no, I'm going to go no. But I guess your problem is, right, is that you're not the Oilers and you're not getting a Calgary team that's kind of crap or like a Vancouver team that's really just a one season wonder.
Or the LA Kings.
Yeah, you're not getting the LA Kings, you know, who you know the Edmonton Oilers are going to win, even though we all keep thinking the Kings are going to win for some stupid-ass reason.
Every year, baby.
But the problem is you are probably playing the best team, the other best team in the West, in the Dallas Stars. And you almost need to build, if you're Chris McFarland, you almost need to build your team to beat them. And if you can beat them, you can probably beat everybody else in the West too, maybe minus the Vegas Golden Knights, because you know they're a little bit more difficult. They play a different style of game. They're not going to run with you. They're going to play more in the trenches. And then whoever comes out, if it's Oilers or if it's even God forbid if it's the Jets, you see in the third round, right? But I think your problem is that your season to make a deep run, especially if you were Jared Bednar, was the 2023 season where Dallas hadn't really exploded yet and have all this talent. And now they do. and they did add Mikko Rantanen, and yeah, they lost a couple of guys in free agency, but are we honestly looking at that Dallas Stars team as nothing but the Cup favorites again? Yeah, Florida Panthers, yada, 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 but whatever. You know, they're going to run into the same problem that every team does at some point, where they're just going to hit a brick wall. I don't know if it's going to be this season, but my God, if they three-peat, that's going to be a sad, sad day for the NHL. But, you know, I agree with you that it's a mix of the two. However, I just think, man, I don't think these rosters have been constructed very comparably, especially when you have when you had $7 million in LTIR. Like, really, that was the best you were doing with that much extra cap? Like, that's kind of brutal, if I'm being honest.
No, I would. But I would also like the last series for me is the kind of the one that killed all faith I have in anything of this front office, and it's basically like you had like all the opportunity. The Jets are frauds. The Oilers are still the Oilers. Like, you could have made it to the conference finals, but you just even though you were the better team on 5-on-5 against Dallas, like even though you kind of controlled the majority of the games, you just coughed up leads. Like, you just had an inability to clutch. Like, you just didn't look like you were a strong team. And that, to me, like, obviously, you know, Ray Bennett is a moron and can't manage power play. But it's at the end of the day, I just look at that and I say, like, that's a head coaching problem. Like, get me a different head coach. If Dallas keeps beating you, then fire your coach, because he's clearly not the guy that can lead you. I mean, there are other coaches out there. Rick Tocchet's gone. You let him go. Jim Montgomery is with the Blues. Like, really? You couldn't convince him to go to you? I mean, yeah. And I think as long as we keep running it back, we're not going to be able to progress.
I think I don't know if we're going to be able to run it back. I don't know. But not I do know. But I do know. I do know, right, that building 75% of your center depth from January is not good. And you're not supposed to be reconstructing your roster midseason. You're supposed to be like having your roster ready by the season. So, you know, like, come on, dude. These are simple things. Like, everybody was hopeful, and I was too, that we were going to make a pretty good run there. But at the end of the day, you're giving guys a month and a half, 2 months, barely three, honestly, to become a Stanley Cup contending team. You know, you don't rebuild your second and third line center down the middle and expect to go on a run. You really kind of be like, you do what the Florida Panthers do every year, where you know, you have everything set up, and then, you know, you play the Vegas card of Matthew Tkachuk goes on LTIR, and then you just pick up another third line. You pick up a third line winger and a fourth line winger and maybe like a D-man, and you just go, hey, we're going to go win the cup. Thanks. Appreciate that. Like, stop building fundamental pieces of your lineup in March. Build them in July.
This has been something I've had very strong opinions on for at least the last couple of years. The trade deadline is not for splash moves. Splash moves, in my opinion, are made in the offseason while you're kind of looking at the fundamentals of your team. Okay, what is the big area that needs to be worked on? Address it there. The trade deadline for me is, okay, we have our fundamental pieces in place. Are we dealing with injuries, and how can we potentially solve that issue at the trade deadline? If that's not an issue you're worrying about, great, cool, awesome. For the trade deadline, the way that I look at it is, can you build off of what is already working well with your team? This is not I'm going to go splash on a Mikko Rantanen. Unless I'm a GM of a team that is really kind of tanking and I'm looking at going into rebuild mode. Like, if you are a team that has an open cup window, this is not I'm going to go get a Mikko Rantanen. I'm going to go get a
Brock Nelson.
Brock Nelson. I'm not going to go get a Charlie Coyle or it like some of these big pieces. Like, yes, if you're looking at increasing your depth because you have that injury, the injury issues that the Avalanche had, okay, cool. Maybe I can make an argument for it then. But I've always been of the mindset that the trade deadline is, okay, you're maybe filling out pieces that were missing in your bottom four of your defense and your bottom six on your in your offense. This is not a splash zone.
If you're not going to pay Mikko Rantanen $750,000 just because you want to make a point about nobody's making more money than McKinnon, how about you just trade him in the summer so that when Martin Natchez comes in and he's trying to play with Nathan McKinnon, they don't look like a bunch of middle schoolers out there with broom ball sticks. How about you have some planning? How about you have some foresight on what you're going to do?
I will argue this point till the day I die. I still think that trigger was pulled prematurely. I think there were a lot of conversations that I think could have still been had with Rantanen to make something that work. But that's a conversation for another day.
Well, that just proves how bad of a GM he is. If he's not going to get the deal done, if you're not going to have the deal done in November, if you're not going to have the deal done in December, but you're thinking about shipping him out within a week of you and him not agreeing, then what the fuck are you doing, man?
Again, this was a deal that I don't think should have been made in January.
Yeah, because we have a GM that looks like a fucking booger.
I keep seeing highlights like randomly of like Cody Ceci shooting in the bubble and just missing by like 4 feet. I don't know why everyone's re-uploading it.
You lost to that team that had Cody Ceci and Lyubushkin on the right hand side.
Yeah.
Anyway, lower.
They didn't even have Haskinen. How did you lose against that?
Oh my gosh. Well, bringing it back around to Bednar and the Avalanche as a whole, going away from Chris McFarland, loved the rant there, guys. With Bednar going into his 10th season as the Avs head coach, not only is this a kind of big season for Bednar and his long reign as head coach of the Avalanche are turning 30. This year, lots of speculation about what the upcoming season may hold as far as celebrations go. Wrote a mailbag piece a couple weeks ago, just kind of talking about answering some of your questions. Keep an eye on Twitter, my Twitter account, if you guys ever have questions that you want answered. I don't do mailbags very often, but they do happen every so often. But one of the big questions was, are they planning on anything? And I wanted to point out that I did get confirmation from the Avalanche that they will be celebrating 30 this year. There are plans to celebrate turning 30. We don't know what that entails yet, but I was told that an announcement can be expected sometime in August. Could be tomorrow. As of posting this, could be August 31st. We have no clue. Something I did want to talk about, though, quote unquote NHL or Avs insider kind of leaked that the Nordiques jerseys might be returning in the form of an alternate jersey. Now, I have some very strong opinions about this because I am a very big fan of the Avs alternate jerseys. If we're kind of getting into, style mode and whatnot, I love the alternates. They are some of my favorite jerseys league-wide. So to see them potentially go this upcoming season in favor of a kind of modified Nordiques jersey is a little saddening. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, speculations for this upcoming 30th celebration, the Nordiques jerseys potentially making a comeback as the alternates. Your thoughts, Gavin, we'll start with you.
I really like it. Honestly, I don't like the alternate jerseys.
Really?
I don't.
Oh my god!
I think they're displeasing to the eye. I think they look horrible on TV. I don't think they look as good as the home jerseys. Every single time I'm playing a division rival, I'm like, damn, they're in those like boring jerseys. No, I don't. They're not my favorite. No. Honestly, I would love like the Nordique Blues to make a return. I love the. They call it the French Fleur de Lis, I think is what
Fleur de Lis, yeah.
And on the shoulder, I love that. The old logo, it's such good history to draw from. It's so much fun. And yeah, I'm happy about it. I think it's a really cool thing that they can just straight up do. I mean, we've seen with, I think it's the Hurricanes. Weren't they the Whalers, the Hartford Whalers? Mm-hmm. So they've absolutely just drawn from jerseys in the past. I don't think the F should be any different.
What I would love to see from the Avalanche, as somebody who does love the alternate as it is now, I'd love to see them embrace something like the Hurricanes do with Whalers Night and having like a Nordiques kind of throwback, like homage at some point during the season, being able to have that jersey set all planned out. This is the night we wear it. This is the night we pay homage to the team that came before us 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I would love that.
The French Canadian Seance. I like that.
Well, the Whalers are objectively worse, you know, logo than the Nordiques.
It's one of the best logos.
Nordiques better. Nordiques better. Can't change my mind.
My gosh.
As much as I can't believe you don't like the alternates, but that's just me. I think the Navy looks way better. I love.
You're gonna talk about this later.
I love the Navy look personally. You have a Navy shirt on, anyways. I like the Navy look.
What that has to do.
But I love the Nordiques jerseys. I mean, there's a reason why everybody wanted the first reverse retros.
Oh, it was so good.
I mean, the Nordiques jerseys are probably the best in NHL history. Don't listen to Hurricanes fans. They'll tell you that the Whalers jerseys are far better. All you can tell them is, when was the last time they won a cup?
Oh my god, no.
But the Nordiques jerseys are some of the best. Like, if you ask any hockey fan, they'll probably say like the Avalanche had the best reverse retro that first year. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're going to have an amazing Nordiques jersey again. If they do the Nordiques, I'm not holding out any hope, but just saying they have.
You know what I've noticed is I'm looking at the alternate jerseys and they look really good in like a vacuum. Like you look at like them for sale and all that. I see them on players and like the quality just drops off massively.
Disagree.
But it's Fanatics there.
Yeah, okay. You see, the Fanatics deal just kind of screwed everybody over. The jersey
That's
is
a lie, because I didn't like it before that either.
No, jerseys haven't been good since Reebok.
Oh, okay.
I agree. I fully agree, by the way. The Reebok jerseys, those were amazing. I'm
Bring
not going to lie.
Back Reebok.
I know they're a failing company.
Yeah.
Oh, those jerseys were great, but I would love to see some center ice art. I'd love to see them kind of go in, like find something different, something fun to pay homage to 30. I'd like to see more kind of community outreach, I think, with getting fans involved, whether that's with theme nights, things of that sort. I'd love to see more of that this upcoming season as well, I think. But we won't know anything until an announcement later this month. So yeah, other than that, guys, I think that's going to do it for this installment of the Avalanche Warning. As always, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Grant, you want to start off by telling the people where they can find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I think my handle is at like Grant15Foster. If you just want to hear a bunch of rage for Colorado Avalanche games and, you know, just if you are a relatable fan that sometimes when you see players just like do some wacky ass shit and you're just like, what the hell happened there? That's where you can find me. If we reach 2,000 followers, I will personally buy someone an Avalanche hoodie, though.
An Avalanche hoodie. Yes. I'll up that to an Avalanche jersey. Gavin, where can the people find you?
Yeah, you can find me over at the channel Avalanche Digest. I post a lot of short form content over there along with my co-host. We kind of just talk a lot about Av, different pieces of Av's news. And
lots really of Chris McFarland.
Coming soon near you. Definitely a never ending point of contention. So plenty of content, at least on the bright side. But that's where you can find me. Bailey, where can the people find you?
Yeah, is before I get into my personal stuff, shout out to the Hockey Podcast Network for allowing us to do what we do. Be sure to go follow them over on X at Hockey Pod Net. Go find them at the Hockey Podcast Network on their website. They have all sorts of podcasts for all 32 NHL teams. So if you're looking for something, maybe not Avalanche related, looking to kind of get your fill across the league, you can find something to fill your taste there. Not just team related as well. We've got some really cool regular hockey content podcasts as well. Some of the cast of Shorzy has a podcast with the Hockey Podcast Network. So I promise you guys can find anything your heart desires with the Hockey Podcast Network. Be sure to go follow them and check out our other podcasts over there. As far as the socials are concerned, be sure to go follow the podcast over at Avs Morning Pod over on X. We've got a link tree in our bio, not only where you can find us personally and our endeavors, but where you can also find all of our listening platforms and things of that sort to find us and all of our episodes. As far as I go, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that's Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. As you guys probably know by now, I am the credentialed beat writer for the Colorado Avalanche with the Hockey News. So if you're looking for my articles, head on over to the website over there. You can head to the link in my bio to find all of my content over there. Pretty slow for all of us this season, but we're getting closer to preseason hockey, guys, so content will pick up soon.
And NHL 26 is going to be out here in less than a month.
We'll chat about that, I believe, in the next episode. But again, that's going to do it for this one. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will see you guys next time here at the Avalanche Warning. See ya.
Bye-bye.